That doesn't sound like ice. Are you sure that's ice?
Ice has been strange lately.
We got a new refrigerator and we're not sure if what it's making is ice or if it has some other agenda. I don't know.
I got my drink anyway.
All right, I got my drink too.
I'm fairly certain this is ice.
Okay.
Fairly certain.
It's taken us this far, so I'm willing to go with it. I wanted to... Hi, everybody. By the way, thank you for listening to my podcast, and thank you for listening to Damien's podcast.
It's not my podcast.
I know. This is what we call a CYA announcement. It's not his
podcast. It's not my podcast.
I just wanted to invite everybody, in case you missed last week's podcast, please do take the time to listen to it. I interviewed my father, who was in Jerusalem with my mother and my two oldest sisters in 1967 during the Six-Day War. And he gave me a half hour of his time going over his memories of when he realized they were at war and what it was like and what they did afterwards. And it is crazy.
I have a Six-Day War story.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
All right, go for it.
Okay. A gentleman who worked with my father. My father was a television writer and producer. And this gentleman, before he went into the entertainment industry, was a Navy pilot. He was a Blue Angel.
Yeah.
And he's out of the service. And one day, somebody knocks on his door with like pretty much a bag full of cash and says, we want to hire you, but you have to leave right now for the job. And he gets on a plane. I forget what the amount was. It was a ridiculous amount of cash. And he ends up in Israel. They had fighter jets, but they didn't have any pilots to fly them. They
were
brand new fighter jets. And they hired a bunch of retired Americans and British to fly the jets for the Six-Day War.
Huh. I don't think that's true.
Who knows? Who knows?
Maybe it is. I don't know.
That's the story I heard.
Anyway, a lot of guys are telling stories, I'll tell you that.
Yes.
But none has a Brooklyn accent like my father.
Can I just say I love the way not only your father speaks, but your whole family speaks.
Yeah.
When I first met you and your little brother, Isaiah, who was at the time 7, and he's a skinny little kid with a giant head. He looked like Tweety Bird and he talked like Bugs Bunny. It just was so endearing. Your family, and you're up in toothless, stupid New Hampshire,
mm-hmm.
In a town where, can I say the town name?
Sure, go for it.
All right. The town is named Claremont, but everyone in Claremont calls it Clamont because they're too lazy to finish the damn word. And here's this family that you speak like the Brooklyn embassy to Clamont. And you're the only people in the damn town who had read a book or seen a play,
yeah,
or who knew the difference between a novel and an autobiography. I mean, what I'm saying is people in Claremont are really stupid.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you for sharing that.
But not your family.
No. And that's why he married me, because I don't know why.
I can't say that.
Anyway, the other thing that I wanted to say is that I am currently working on improving the audio quality of the interview that I did with my father. And that brings me to another matter. I wanted to ask you guys, all of you who are listening to my podcast, because you are in possession of the secret password, because you're among my treasured patrons who have pledged money to support my blog.
We love you.
I wanted to ask your opinion, of course. I wanted to ask your opinion about opening up the podcast after a certain amount of time to be unpassword protected.
Anybody 1 week or 1 month?
I don't know. I was thinking 2 weeks. I was
2 weeks?
2 weeks, because, you know, so you pledge, you get the fresh hot takes, and then once they've cooled off a little bit, we can open it up to the hoi polloi. So tell me what you think. Send me an email, simcafisher@gmail.com, or contact me through Patreon.
It's .com.
It is. It's very .com. You know what else is .com?
The bomb?
Nope. Escargot commotion. Let me explain.
That sounds
it's a
dirty.
Story. Well, it wants to be. It's a strange story that I was reading in I think Atlas Obscura about telepathic snails. This was back from a couple hundred years ago.
No.
When a lot of things seemed possible and science was sort of exploding in all different directions at once. People knew that a lot of things were possible, but they weren't sure exactly which things. And there were also a lot of, you know, hucksters and cheats and liars and crazy people out there. So
sounds like science,
guys,
yeah.
A couple of Frenchmen discovered that snails seem, after snails mate, they seem to have some sort of connection with each other. And they determined through ways that I don't even want to speculate about that this was some sort of a telepathic connection through the exchange of sympathetic fluids, and that there would be a lifelong telepathic a bond between these two snails. And they says to themselves, they says, well, we can use these snails to communicate with each other across oceans. All we have to do is have a snail on one side and have its mate on the other side and send messages electrically, like they could send letters, they could send messages, they could send electrical impulses through them.
Can I just say, this sounds kind of legit.
I thought you would feel that way, but it turns out it doesn't work.
It doesn't work? Snails. What if you ate the snail?
Well,
what if you put it in your ear?
I think then its spouse would haunt you forever.
What if you stuck it up your nose?
Because then it would try and talk to you.
What if you put it in a very private place?
Oh, come on. Right. That's the first part of the podcast. You had to go right
Wait,
there.
Wait, I think I'm getting a note from one of our producers.
There's some kind of in the doorway here.
No, it's one of our producers.
Oh, my gosh. I'm just going to keep on talking.
You keep talking.
All right. Well, oh, you people... You know, you try and get a little peace and quiet in this house. Oh, here's something that I read in Smithsonian Magazine, Damien. This is science. This is pure science.
This sounds nerdy. Okay.
No, you're going to like
I'm
this
bored.
One. No, you're going to like this one.
Okay,
so they used to think that the reason, you know how different females of different species gestate their babies for different lengths of time, and like elephants are pregnant for like 2 years or something horrible like that. You know? All right, fine. What does the note say?
The note from our crack research team
yeah.
says, and this I want to get back to the pregnancy thing.
I'm sure you do.
But this gets back to the snail thing from just a moment ago. Again, our crack research team, highly paid crack research team. In One Piece, they don't use phones, they use snails.
Aha. Uh-huh.
That has been another tidbit about One Piece from our crack research team. Thank you.
If you don't know anything about One Piece, consider yourself lucky, because I know a lot about
One Piece. I don't need to know anything about One Piece. All I need to know is my research team will tell me.
All right. They'll send you notes at the best possible time.
Yes.
All right. So there used to be a theory that the reason that females gestated different lengths of time was because it had to do with finding sort of the perfect balance between the pelvic size of the female and the brain of the baby.
Because the head makes sense.
The head got to get through, right?
Yep.
And as humans developed and became brainier, their heads got bigger. And then you want them to get too big. Mm-hmm. It was a theory. It was a theory and process.
I'll go with this.
The best they could come up with for a while. Well, they've decided that there's actually no evidence for that. It was just like it was a kind of goodish idea. But it turns out, I'm just going to go ahead and read it to you. It says, instead, gestation is determined by energy. Studies of mammals show that during pregnancy, females reach their species' metabolic ceiling, the upper limit of the amount of energy they can expend. Blah, 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 blah. Then at 9 months, the energy demands of a fetus go beyond this metabolic threshold. Extending gestation by even a month would likely require metabolic investment beyond the mother's capacity, the team writes. So what I'm trying to tell you is that in the third trimester, when I say if this goes on much longer, I'm going to die.
It's true.
It's science.
It sounds
science.
I could have told
there.
Them that.
Yeah, well, I couldn't get off the couch.
I'm going to die. Like, I guess it's time for that of the baby. I can't do this. The baby's crowning right now. I have to leave the room now.
I'm just saying, if it was you, you would have also wanted to leave.
Yes. I also would have started taking drugs, like, a lot sooner.
Yeah.
I just want to say this is a woman who gave birth 10 times. 9 times without the assistance of drugs.
Yeah, and
which
the
is
10th
crazy.
Time I finally gave in, and you know what? It was not a big freaking deal. It didn't help that much.
Got fentanyl, though. That should have helped a lot.
Yeah, but you were asleep. You told me. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and say this
I was
on
not
the air.
Asleep.
Oh, yes.
No, I was not.
Were.
No, I was not.
You were snoring during transition. You snored through transition, and then you woke up, and you said, I think you got more rest than I did. You said that. That is a thing that you said.
I don't recall.
I do, and I'm never going to forget it ever, ever, ever.
I thought you ladies forgot this shit.
Nope.
No.
That's just a myth. All right, here's something unforgettable. ballet dancer leaps onto subway tracks and lifts man to safety. I like this story. This is from the New York Times.
Fake news.
So, okay, it starts out a little bit weird. A couple of homeless people on the subway having an argument, making people uncomfortable. Then the lady starts yelling at the guy and pushes him onto the tracks and runs away. And everybody's like, oh no, now what should I do? Well, in the crowd, there was a guy who was a ballet dancer, and he had just come back from watching his wife, who is also a ballet dancer, and he was recovering from...
He was married?
To a woman, yep.
To a lady?
Listen, he's a hero. So shut up. What's the matter with you? So he jumps down and picks the guy up and basically like lifts him up over his head and puts him up onto the platform again. And then he looks and sees... Oh no, there is a train coming.
Oh,
because
no.
He didn't really think it through. He said, this is what he says. At first I waited for someone else to jump down there, says Gray Davis, 31, a dancer with American Ballet Theater. People were screaming to get help, but nobody jumped down. So I jumped down.
Oh gosh.
And then he realized he was lucky to be a ballet dancer, and he just kind of put his leg up and schlepped himself up out of there. So they gave him some flowers. And
flowers at the very least.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he probably got... I mean, he got covered in the New York Times. That's pretty good, too.
Yeah. It's fake news.
Oh, you know, it's just not that funny, you know?
Well, I'm sorry. That's all I hear all day.
Oh,
people
you do?
Call me up.
People call you. Well,
fake news.
Fake news.
That isn't the real budget number. It's fake news. Sorry. I'm taking it right from the budget book.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Well, you should have gotten hold of
fake news.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Fake news is all I hear.
I know. And then you come home and I yell at you for something that you said 2 years ago. I'm sorry.
And it didn't happen.
But it
didn't
did.
Bloody
it
happen.
It really did.
Did not bloody happen.
Yeah.
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 I was there. It didn't happen.
You were asleep, though.
No, I was not.
Yeah. In the chair. So anyway, here's something from the Telegraph. UK.
I'm about ready to quit.
This, just go ahead. This is my podcast.
Yeah, damn right.
All right. No, but this is interesting. Man Booker Prize-winning novelist, Dame Hilary Mantel, says that writing about women in history was a persistent difficulty for her contemporaries who can't resist retrospectively making them strong and independent. I mean, you have seen this, right? Anytime everybody loves these historical TV shows, historical dramas and movies and everything, but they can't help taking 21st century women and, you know, dressing them up in a frilled collar and then making them, quote, Gloria Steinem or something. Not in so many, but you know what I'm talking about. It's irritating. It's very irritating. They have all these modern ideas, and they feel very oppressed because here they are living in the 16th century, and it's very, very sexist back then, and it bothers them. You know who is really, well, you probably haven't read her, but Isabel Allende is,
didn't she write that Zorro book?
I haven't read it. The Zorro
it.
Book was kind of fun. It was definitely a guilty pleasure book, but it was readable. It was kind of
I think. I think if you're going to be a South American magical realist novelist,
yeah,
you bloody better write Zorro.
Yeah, and that's how she felt, and she went ahead and she wrote the heck out of it. So, you know, it was about as you would expect. It was a fun book, but some of her books are distinctly less fun. They always remind me of that scene in Blazing Saddles where the bad guys are going into the town, or hooping and hollering and busting everything up and wrecking everything, and they start, one of them holds an old woman and the other one starts punching her in the stomach and punching her and slapping her around, and she looks right into the camera and she says, "Oh, have you ever seen such cruelty?" And then she goes, oh, that's pretty much what the whole book was like. But anyway, it was very much you know, putting modern sensibilities and modern expectations into historical situations where they didn't belong and where people just didn't used to think that way, you know?
Well, you can't read anything anymore, though,
yeah,
that's from even 20 years ago or 30 years ago without realizing, this is so sexist. This wouldn't fall. I'm reading a John le Carré novel.
Yeah.
And there's some, you know, there's some kind of sexist bits. It's a book of... about men by a man, and it wouldn't fly today. He would get roasted alive for some of the stuff in this book.
I know, and boy, I'm really of two minds about it, because it's true. There is a lot of super ingrained sexism that people just don't even recognize any. Still, at this point,
to a degree, but there's also, I think, like in the case of this book, it's certainly a reflection of the time and of the attitude,
and in some ways,
not that I'm agreeing with it, but in some ways of how men actually think.
Right, right.
And you can't, and men aren't actually allowed to express how they think anymore.
Right, I know.
And let's stipulate, men are kind of gross, but we built not, shit.
Right. Well, anyway, I'll tell you though, there is an author who certainly could have been very guilty of this, but who doesn't, and that is an author whose name I can't remember at the moment. She wrote Kristen Lovren's Daughter. Who wrote that, Damien?
I believe that was Spike Mulligan.
Right, it was Spike Mulligan. No, it was Mickey Spillane, I thought.
I believe you're right. Studs Terkel.
It was Studs Terkel. It was totally Studs Terkel, the great Scandinavian author Studs Terkel, who was, by the way, a beautiful woman. If you've ever seen pictures of her, that's
hubba,
Studs Terkel.
Hubba.
Exactly. The tilted eyes and the braids up on her head, just gorgeous. plump, full lips and everything.
We have a peanut gallery tonight, which is why I'm not making several comments.
Kristen Lovren's Daughter. I mean, the whole book is centered on the horrible way that Kristen is treated by her hideous husband and by, you know, I mean, the whole society is ridiculously sexist, but it's not, and she's suffering and she's realizing that she's suffering, but she doesn't see it that way. Oh, Sigrid Undset, that's who it is, not Mickey Spillane. I knew it would come to me as soon as I read it, where I had written
Sigrid,
it down.
Sigrid what?
Sigrid Undset. Undset.
Is there an umlaut involved?
I don't know. I do not know how to do
I
that.
I believe
with
there
the
ought to be an umlaut.
No,
involved.
You don't even know what that's for. In English,
it's for badass
them.
Death metal is what it's for.
The more the better. They're basically just like poppy seeds.
Motley Crue, I think, is at least two umlauts.
Well, I guess I'll just let that go. I have here a link to an article that I haven't read yet, so I'm going to go ahead and not comment on that.
That's
one,
good.
If that's
now,
okay with you.
We do have a couple of very special guests tonight.
Yeah, they're pretty special. They're pretty special. We saw the movie Moana this weekend. We saw it last weekend.
We saw it last weekend.
We watched it all together as a family. I didn't fall asleep or anything.
We got the disc on Netflix.
Yep.
And we liked it so much we went ahead and bought the disc so we could
disc.
Watch it constantly.
Yes, and we haven't wrecked it yet. I love this movie. I love this
it's
movie
great.
So much. Yeah, I'm not going to rehash what I wrote about it on the blog because I know everybody reads every single word that I write and commits it to memory and has it.
But we do have two special guests tonight who would like to speak about their experience with Moana. We have Dora, who is graduating from high school this week,
mm-hmm.
and we have Sophia, who is graduating from high school in several years if we allow her to leave the house ever again.
You might want to start growing your hair, Snuffy, because.
Yeah, you're going to need a prince to come climb up. Yeah. All right. I'm going to hand my microphone over to these two lovely ladies.
All right. In hopes that they have something to say. Sophia, come on over.
Hi.
Hi. So, did you like the movie?
A lot.
You liked it a lot. Did you like it immediately as soon as you saw it?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. What was your favorite part of it?
I liked the scene the most when... Moana was just finding out that the evil lava monster was actually, like, the creator of life.
Yeah.
And, like,
Spoiler!
Thank you.
Yes.
Because in most movies, it's, like, obvious and only then, like, the characters notice and you're just like, yes, that was so obvious. But then you only realize...
Yeah.
That, and that's what I liked about
yeah,
that scene.
Yeah, it was very powerful and very effective, but it made perfect sense, too. It wasn't just, like, so startling and unexpected, and you had to think about whether or not it made sense. You're like, oh, okay, that brings everything together, yeah. Oh, what a beautiful movie, too. It was so pretty. How about the music? Did you like the music?
I loved it so much.
would you sing for us, Sophia?
No.
No. Okay. All right, we'll get back to you in a minute, Dora. Would you like to share your thoughts with us?
All right. Two of my favorite parts from Moana. Number one, is Maui's character, because he has a really consistent sense of humor throughout the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a kind of a dark sense of humor. And I kind of relate to that a lot for some reason. But he's got this dark sense of humor, but he never stops being, like, you know, a great person. So I don't know. He's just, it's a really great, consistent character, and it's really different from a lot of kids' movie characters that we see, because he does have a darker side to him, and it's a really obvious
side. He's got this dark past, and he's got this, like, millennia-long misunderstanding attached to his
and it really affects him. It doesn't just affect him once the movie needs it to. It, like, really affects all of his actions throughout the movie. So
it's a stellar movie, stellar
characters. My other favorite part was my favorite part, like, the second I watched this movie. I've seen this movie 3 times. I watched it twice yesterday.
I'm going to blame that on Corey.
Yeah, I would blame that on her, too.
Yeah.
I only really noticed the Maui bit, like, the third time watching it. But my favorite part is the song Shiny by the crab character. I can't remember what his name is for the life of me. Jermaine Clement does his voice, but I can't remember the crab character's name. Like, I can't, giant crab monster.
Yep. There's really only one giant crab monster.
But he's my favorite character. I don't know why. He's got a great voice.
It's a weird character.
It's a really different song and like music video-ish kind of. It's a different sequence than what you're used to. And I think a lot of that is because I think one of, I forget what he did for this movie, but I think it was the director for The Princess and the Frog, which has a lot of really kind of weird, dark sequences.
Kind of stuff,
the voodoo
it
guy.
It was kind of otherworldly, because he was supposed to be sort of jumping down into this dark pit, into the Sea of Monsters or something.
The Land of Monsters.
So it was very, very disorienting, very weird and otherworldly, and very sort of alarming in every way.
So that I hope that guy, whoever did that for The Princess and the Frog and for Moana, I hope he keeps on working at Disney and Pixar, because that was some good stuff.
It was a very interesting assembly of characters.
Yeah, it was just a really great movie.
And I liked Moana's voice so much. I cannot tell you what a relief it was. The only other Disney princess or Disney whatever heroine whose voice I liked so much was old Pocahontas, and that was the only good thing about her. My gosh, she had pretty eyes, but what an insufferable person. Holy mackerel, that was
an insufferable movie.
The whole movie. I know. Don't you feel ashamed? That's what that whole movie was about. I'm like, I wasn't even here. My grandparents were growing up in the Ukraine at the moment, so it's really not my fault. But
yeah.
But she had a nice voice, and then we went right back to the nasal squawky, you know, the ones in Frozen, the singers in Frozen were okay.
They were professional singers.
They were professional singers, and they were so brazen, just such a pushy brat. Well, no, I just mean it was a very hard kind of voice, whereas Moana she sounds like a girl, which
because
was really
played by a 16-year-old girl.
Right, and that was the nice thing. There was no love interest in this movie at all. It just there
that
wasn't
made
any
me so happy.
There wasn't any need for it. There wasn't any room for it, and it just didn't come up at all, which was so refreshing.
Yeah.
That was nice.
Because,
again,
she was 16, and the only other character for the majority of the movie is, like, a 1,000-year-old demigod.
Yeah.
So
it would have been inappropriate.
A little bit.
I'm glad you think of these things, Dora.
Thank you. I think a lot about this movie, because it's a really good movie. I almost made my graduation cap about this movie, but then I went with Zoidberg.
That's my girl.
Thank you.
All right. Sophia, do you have anything you want to add, sweetheart? Nope, she doesn't have anything.
She has nothing.
All right, Damien, I got a poem. Do you have anything else you want to put in before I wrap it up? Thank you, girls.
Thank you, girls. No, I think that this has been a very successful show so far in that, you know, we haven't gotten divorced.
Gee.
I'm going to go take a nap on the couch now.
I think you should, bro.
I think I will.
You can do that for about 2 hours. Apparently, you can sleep through anything.
Apparently, I can. While you're dying.
Okay. No, that's the thing. I wasn't dying. Instead, I was having the baby.
You were on the verge of death.
I was on the verge of death. But we got Corey out of it, so it all worked out okay.
Which she is killing us.
Maybe it would have been.
I mean, holy cow.
Oh my gosh, that kid. I know, Damien comes home at night. He says, "Are you okay?" I say, "Yeah, I'm just tired." Corey. It was Corey.
Corey. And she comes, when I come home, sometimes I come home at 8 or 9 or 10, and she's just bouncing off the walls going, "Daddy!"
Oh my gosh, she didn't even have any clothes on when you came home.
Yeah.
But that's because I gave her a bath.
That's true. And her hair was clean.
Mm-hmm. Cleaner.
Ish. She didn't pee on anything while I was home.
All right. You know, boy, you keep dragging this down. I'm trying to.
Why don't you read your poem? I have a poem
by Wendell Berry. And you.
Now, is that the Wendell Berry of Knott's Berry Farm?
I think you're thinking of Knott's Berry of Knott's Berry Farm.
No, I'm thinking of Don Knotts.
You're thinking
I'm
of
always
Mickey
thinking
Spillane.
Of Don Knotts.
Yeah, I know you are. All right, you know what? I don't have the name for this poem, but I think a lot of people will recognize it. Anyway, but this is a poem by Wendell Berry. All right. When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water, and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things, who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free.
Not bad.
I think that's a very good idea. I'm going to try that. Well, this has been your podcast.
You've wasted approximately 28 minutes.
Oh, nope. 26 minutes and 53 seconds, suckers. Yeah.